Welcome to the Careless Talk Climbing Podcast.
What the hell was that, I hear you ask? Well, one of our patroons has written some jingles, and I like them, so I'm trying them out. We'll see how they go. Maybe we'll keep them, maybe we won't, but yeah, just trying them on for size. Welcome to the Careless Talk Climbing Podcast with me, Sam Pryor, and my co-host, Aidan Roberts. This week, we get the added benefit of having a world-class climber as one of our co-hosts, as Aidan has been crushing projects, and as ever, when Aidan crushes projects, it is sort of newsworthy. So we've got a lot of stuff to discuss there. Hot news, fresh off the press. So for all the big Aidan fans out there, this will be a great episode for you. And just to say that if you're enjoying the podcast and you'd like to support us, we have a Patreon page where we have a bit of extra content on one tier, and the other tier also gets access to our Discord channel, where you can join in the chat on the most wholesome anonymous forum on the internet and also support the podcast at the same time. So thank you very much for that. But yeah, without further ado, news. Ciao.
Ciao. Heck, it looks like a glorious day over there.
Yeah. Well, looks can be deceiving, actually. It is... The sun is coming in and out, but it is insanely windy.
Oh, oof. That's going to be savage.
Yeah. Probably relatively decent conditions for anyone who's out at it today, but I should imagine...
grit?
I don't know if it would be windy enough, because it's a really warm wind. Weird.
That's actually... Yeah. I feel like grit season's probably behind us.
I think grit season didn't really arrive this year from the sounds of things.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was just wet. It was warm and wet, and then it was wet and wet, and now it's warm and wettish, but too warm. Even if it was dry, it'd be too warm now.
Yeah, okay.
So where are you? What is this little cubicle?
I'm actually now in a meeting room that's attached to a climbing wall.
Oh, so, okay. What happened to the public library?
Turns out you need a Finnish national ID card to book, to make an account, and you need an account to book the rooms. The library, pretty epic.
Okay.
Maybe it makes sense. It's kind of so epic that it makes sense that you maybe need to be Finnish to like kind of fully utilize all of the facilities. In that it's an insane public library. There's like 3D printers, which you, like this, they're all things that you can just reuse for free. And there's like sewing machines, workshop spaces, laser cutters, 3D printers, recording studios.
Okay, that is not the traditional British public library, which just has about 100 tawdry paperbacks and some children's coloring books.
Yeah. No, it's pretty crazy. It's pretty nice there. So,
How are they funding that? We can't fund our libraries to love the money.
I don't know. This is like very, very nice. On a very snowy, cold rest day, went there for like, a rest day, and spent pretty much the whole day there without really realizing. Just doing some writing, doing some reading, having a little nosy around. It's kind of like a museum as well. They have like exhibitions on from time to time, and like, yeah, it's insane.
Wow.
Pretty nice.
Fair play. So do you want to slightly explain where you are? Because you've kind of done the biggest wet weather bail of all time.
Entertainingly, because you currently don't know this, I arrived for one day of, well, actually, funny story. You will like this, actually. So...
should I be worried? Does that mean that there's going to be some form of misfortune, and do you think that that's just going to, I'm just going to find it hilarious because I can't help but laugh at other people's misfortune?
I mean, partly that.
Bastard.
I mean, that's part of it.
Good.
Long story short, had a climbing trip in Switzerland that was undetermined how long it was. I've been experimenting, and we'll dig into it later, a little more of spontaneity, or like following natural motivations in climbing. And I went to Switzerland mid-March, which was the first day I could go there, due to the EU days formulation that I constructed myself over the winter. And so headed out into Europe. The main thing I knew I was pretty motivated by was the Midnight Project, which I've tried quite a lot over the last 2 years into Chino, which, yeah, from when the first time I arrived there. So that was kind of like the thing I was most excited to try. And I like knew that I wanted to try that and was going to kind of play it by ear if I was like trying it, have no fun on it, or like not enjoying trying it and then maybe reassessing kind of thing. Anyway, was enjoying trying it. Can get into the details later, but ended up doing it and then had a few days of being kind of just confused and not really like, oh, I mean, like not really knowing what to try and feeling a little bit aimless, but kind of having a really nice time and kind of like climbing a little bit. And like, well, I just went on some projects just to like play around on them. Physically felt awful, like big come down. Physically felt just like ransacked and like kind of like very like fragile. And I basically just didn't sleep the following night. I actually had an early night. It wasn't like I was partying or anything. Took an early night, didn't sleep a wink. I think
I hate when that happens. That's bullshit, isn't it? When you try and be all good and have a really early night because you're tired and then you just don't sleep anyway. I feel cheated when that happens.
Yeah, I think I fully just shot my central nervous system and I was wired and like twitchy and yeah, crazy busy mind and everything. So basically didn't sleep. And I think also was just tired for the days coming. And then basically the forecast had been pretty daunting with a stint of like wet, cold ahead in Switzerland. And this stint just seemed to get bigger and more severe. We're talking like 60 mil of like precipitation in a day kind of thing. It looked like about a week of terrible weather.
Yeah. I was on an arc building amount of rain.
Yeah, and I was in my van, and Sam, I was out in convoy vans with Sam Pratt, who had 8 days left of the trip, and it looked like maybe he could get one day in at the end of it all. Anyway, it was like the first really like heavy rain day due. We went to bed, woke up, and I was like, oh, there's no rain on the van. Sweet. Like it'd been raining heavily like as I went to bed. It's kind of comforting when you hear the pitter-patter.
I love it.
Like woke up and was like, sounds bone dry out there. Open the window. Turns out it was just heavy, heavy snow. And then we're just getting deeply snowed in. And then was like, oh gosh, like probably should get out of here. We're in Brioni. The snowplow went past. So we were like, ah, snowplow's gone past. Let's seize the opportunity and just get out of there. So crested down into the valley bottom and then was like, ah, okay, yeah, we've got like a week of terrible weather now. Probably not going to climb. Maybe we can find some dry caves, which we can't top out. Probably not going to do much climbing. And Ticino, I love as a place to climb, but I don't think it's that well set up for climbing walls and being in a van, not that fun. So Sam was like, ah, okay, I'm in my van. I've got freedom to move around. Don't really fancy questing on for like 8 days with potentially having one day of climbing at the end of it. I'm going home. I think probably a good shout. And he had quite a lot.
I would do the same. Yeah.
He had quite a lot of work to do as well. So he was going to be doing that in the van and he was just going to be easier at home. So he left and then been chatting with him, like the idea of going up to Finland afterwards, which maybe I'd thought about in autumn, but I hadn't really like considered in the run up to this Swiss trip. Then my friend Clem Lachap had a trip organized up here with Nico Pelisson, another local French guy. And he sent me a message saying, it's pretty nice up here. You should come. And so he came to Finland.
came to Finland, just yeah, sort of 30 hours in the car later.
Yeah, just whizzed up to Finland, which was like kind of nice because I was feeling a bit aimless. And, you know, I don't know, like if you've like, I've had it a few times when like I've done a project or like put loads of time and energy into it, but not really like necessarily had expectations of how it'll feel like. And there's a bit of like a come down, like kind of like, oh, like what am I? It's kind of comparing it maybe to like, you know, if you've had a really grueling exam season and you kind of like have this idea that, or you kind of like don't really know what it'll feel like. You don't really have expectations or what it'll feel like in your mind, maybe hope that, I don't know, the last submission is going to be like this euphoric moment where you're like, ah, I'm so free. Or like,
yeah.
And then it's always anticlimactic.
I've known it to happen more to you than actual to other people, but I've seen it a bit in other people, but I've seen it most profoundly in you actually.
Yeah. Maybe because I wonder if other people feel it, and just I feel like I talk to you about it quite a lot.
Maybe. Yeah. But I could, like last time, remember, I could tell that you were sad before I knew you'd done the project.
Yeah, you said I had sad eyes.
Yeah.
But I don't think often I feel really tired, but I definitely didn't feel sad. I actually felt...
Sad's not quite the right term, is it?
I felt like super grateful, but I was just a bit like, what am I doing now? I kind of am used to having some structure. In the past, if I was like studying, there's some structure to your time, even when you're like kind of have some aimlessness in your climbing, and you might have this with work or you've got family. You've got like a certain structure. I think I felt it because I was on a climbing trip and I'd kind of like trained and prepared and carved out this time to be on a climbing trip. So like I was kind of like, okay, pretty much I'm climbing now and really excited for it, but not really sure what I'm motivated by in climbing. And so I was kind of like just having a few days of like, not really sure what I'm going to do, just being content to just kind of potter around on stuff. And then with loads of rain due, I was kind of like, you know what? I know I'm at least motivated to go back to Finland. And we've often spoken about moving the goalposts, so I was quite wary of just, maybe I'm just like shifting the goalpost to the next project, which I guess I am. But I felt pretty motivated by it. And I've been like pretty excited by coming here. Pretty happy to be here and don't feel like I'm forcing things too much.
Have you had any conditions? What's it been like since you got there?
Yeah, then here comes a funny story. Driving through Germany, warning light comes on in my van saying there's an AdBlue system fault. The van won't restart after like 280 miles or something. Bear in mind, my ferry, which I booked non-flexibly, is like 250 miles away. And so I was like, ooh, well, I'll make it there. So I kind of just was just like, well, I definitely can't book another ferry. So I'm just going to make it to the ferry, but knew that I would arrive in Helsinki and not have enough mileage left to like get to any of the climbing, and also didn't want to drive into the forest and then not be able to restart the van. And this coincided with Easter, Sunday and Monday. And so the garages were closed. Ended up actually at the end of my time in autumn, I met like a guy at Lapnor who turned out to run a climbing wall here in Helsinki. And so I messaged him to ask if basically I knew the climbing wall was near the ferry port, asked him to ask if I could park my van here. He was like, yeah, sure, no problem. And it was quite fortunate because then I could keep the van here. Turned out he was also a mechanic. And so had cool. Some like mechanic connections as well. And so like basically helped me out. And this other guy, one of his good friends as well, like came and helped me out. And like a few days later sorted out the van, and turns out it was like a sensor electric fault that was a very quick fix. But it meant that my initial part of the trip was a few days in Helsinki, roaming around, doing some indoor climbing. Pretty nice.
Nice.
And then got out into the forest. Got hit by -8 at night and like snow blizzards and not much climbing. So I'd looked at the forecast before coming here, and it was meant to be like kind of like, I don't know, 5 to 10 degrees, kind of like maybe some overcast days, maybe some sunny days. I was like, sounds lovely. Like it's better than Switzerland. And then got slumped by some blizzards and not much climbing. But have now climbed yesterday.
You climbed yesterday. Is that just the one session since you've been there?
No. I've had another one, which was really cold and really dry.
Did you do the Simon tactic of sitting in your van, warming up, and then sprinting up to the boulder to have a go?
No, because the last bit of road to the boulder was snowy enough that I didn't want to get the van stuck. I parked and walked in. Yeah, pretty hard. One of those sessions which was suffering and hard to warm up for me. But then yesterday was still pretty cold for me, but I could function. And felt pretty good. Last move feels much more reliable. I have a slight different foothold that I jump off. So feel like that's more, I've actually think, because essentially since I did midnight, I had almost 2 weeks of not really climbing properly. And I felt totally shattered, probably from the driving as well. Just like wasn't really recovering, like basically felt really just physically pretty like there. And like on the whole, my fingers feel a lot better because most of my training I can get into all that stuff was mostly focused. It was focused towards midnight. So it was kind of like, basically my fingers feel quite good. So on burden, the holds feel much better and I feel good in the positions, but I feel like a little uncoordinated when moving quickly. I haven't really been doing much powerful training for quite a while. Didn't really do any burden prep since I was here last autumn, because I wasn't necessarily thinking that I'd be here. But it's fun. So yeah, I changed my method, used the drop knee method.
Is that Simon's method?
Yeah, through the middle section. And that feels really good. It feels like, compared to the other way I was trying it, I think it's probably like more physical. Like you put a lot more weight through the hand and like, it's like quite a deep pull. But I was just finding the other way that you spend loads of time on the holds and the footholds and like a foot can pick, or what I was finding loads was like dry fire going to like the pinch. And this way maybe feels a bit more physical, but feels like the ball's in your court a little bit more. Yeah, pull through it a bit more, which feels like it's worth persevering with. And I imagine I'll learn the drop knee position better as well, but that feels way better. I'm like pretty happy with that.
Sick. Did you try any of Elias? Is it Elias?
Elias.
Elias.
Yeah. Elias.
Did you try any of Elias's sequence?
The heel hook? Nope.
Or the total like backwards hands?
Oh yeah. So that requires using the heel hook after the first move.
Okay.
Which I think I'd find really hard anyway, but I've had that slight glute hamstring or hamstring insertion flare up over the winter on my left side, and putting my heel in that position doesn't feel so great.
Okay. So that's a write off then.
I think I'd probably find that method really hard anyway, because I'm usually not so good in that kind of box or on those sort of like slick heels or catch heel kind of things, but didn't really feel like I'd try that. But I'm pretty happy with the drop knee method, actually. That feels pretty good. His way for the last move is funny as well, and that's definitely, I'm definitely not trying
the paddle. Have you tried it? You
didn't
try
one too. It feels so such a big move that way. You gotta climb. He climbs really powerfully. It's like really.
Is he
dynamic.
Quite tall as well? Or no?
He's taller than I. I don't know how tall, but he climbs really dynamically as well. So he's really powerful as a climber. So like moves really explosively.
Okay, so basically none of his sequence is going to work for you at all then.
No,
that's but a shame, I think because it's so different. I've so much credit for figuring out. What, because you'd think of like burden, you'd think it's going to be relatively straightforward. You know, it's a board climb, isn't it? And then he's done almost every move differently.
But I think everyone pretty much like does different things these days.
That's cool though, isn't it? That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's amazing how a simple climb can be personalized so much.
There was quite a lot of chat on the Discord about how people start off a different foot than how Gnarly did. Back when he first did it. Is that because, is that the foot you broke? Did you broke a foot, didn't you? Is that?
No. So I think, so all the feet and holds that Gnarly used are still there. So I think Toru was the first guy to try it after Gnarly, or maybe like the first guy I've spoken to try it after Gnarly. And I met him this trip and he said the handholds have stayed the same. Some of the footholds have broke. There's like a spike foothold, which is the one that most people use to like match the the hold before the penultimate, like the last move. So you basically Gnarly had his left foot on it when he jumped for the last hold. And apparently that's got worse. I can't remember if it was before or after Gnarly did it, but basically Gnarly used to have a sequence where he put his left foot there after the first move. And I think that foothold got worse, but I don't know if it was before or after Gnarly did it. But other than that, I think all the feet have stayed the same, apart from one which Stefano and Sean Rabatou were using, which was for the second move of the match, which I tried a couple of times. I think I was trying to drop knee on it. And the first time I tried it, I was like, wow, that is great. And then the second time I tried it, it came off. So, so yeah, but that was a new foothold that Stefano found, I think. And I think Sean still uses it, though it's worse.
Okay. So the situation right now? So, how many people are out there trying it?
So Clem and Nico are trying it. Myself, Tori left.
But was it Kokoro just arrived?
Kokoro and, yeah, Ryohei. I can't remember how to pronounce his name. I met them this morning and they were trying.
Right.
Which, yeah, it's pretty busy scenes. They actually haven't had busy scenes at the Boulders. It's been nice. I feel like there's a lot less cameras about these days as well. So it feels pretty relaxed.
Mm, I guess the more people do it, the fewer cameras will be there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a nice, is there still a tarp in constant situ on it?
No. Haven't put the tarp up yet, which I quite like.
That's nice.
Feels like it's cleaning up a little bit. No stash pads there. So it kind of feels a bit more like a natural boulder now.
Nice.
Yeah.
And do you have any idea how long you've got?
No, I'm on a spontaneous adventurous trip.
So you could be out there for
I think my Europe days come to an end at the end of May, but I definitely won't be here that long because it'll definitely be too warm by then. Wow, I haven't actually used that many of my European days. Yeah, so I've got loads of time.
You got loads of time, but I guess there isn't that much that will be sort of like once you head into late May, there's not that much in condition, is there?
I think there's higher altitude stuff. I've been chatting to Nikki Cheria, and there's some of the higher stuff in Northern Italy. That's quite far away. Or I don't know if stuff in Sweden.
Nice.
Could be options. So kind of playing it by ear, I'd say.
Should we... So let's talk... Because the reason why you ended up going to Finland is because you did the Midnight Project, which you just said earlier. I've not just announced that. You said that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, you said that.
How are you, Sam?
Oh yeah, good. But mate, we got so much to cover on you. This is going to be the life and times of Aidan again. This episode.
Oh no,
I've got loads of information to uncover. Did you not?
So maybe we've been taking
broadsides on UKB again.
We've been taking broadsides.
Mm.
How so?
Again, not even our first time.
I haven't been on UK. Wait, but the first time we took that was. That was our first ever episode, wasn't it?
Yeah. So we're back. We're back in the UKB shit list.
Wait, what have we done now?
Because people are trying to figure out what it is you've done. And then there's someone on there said that you announced it, but it's on the Patreon. And so then people have got really angry about gatekeeping climbing news behind a paywall.
Fair enough. No, it's not fair enough.
It's an interesting concept, isn't it? Because like, I actually think there is an interesting discussion there, but there's also people getting really salty, maybe a bit more than necessarily. Like, part of me thinks I don't think anyone owes it to anyone else to say what they've done.
Yeah, that was kind of the point I was going to start with, because this is like quite an interesting point, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, okay, for the people listening, UKB is a climbing forum based in the UK. UK Bouldering is what it's called. And there's always a lot of chatter. It's anonymous. So people who write entries can be anonymous. And so maybe there's a nice community of folk chattering about climbing media. But also, as we know, in anonymous like kind of forums on the internet, it can be a little bit toxic at times as well, and so it's very unfiltered, maybe, let's say. But there's some, actually, I don't think the UKB is toxic. That's harsh.
I think it can be. I've seen some really unnecessarily salty comments on there, not about us all the time. Just in general, yeah. I think that it falls foul of being an anonymous forum from time to time. And every online anonymous forum gets people just occasionally taking things People will say things quite happily on there that they would never say to someone's face.
Yeah. You got the safety of a computer and no one knowing that it's you with those opinions. Okay, and the point that they're making is...
The point that they're making is that we shouldn't put stuff that's climbing news behind a paywall of £3 a month on our Patreon page.
Yeah. Okay. So essentially,
little shout out there.
Yeah. So essentially, okay. I will. I'm not going to say defend myself because I don't think that's necessarily. I don't know if I entirely agree with that criticism, but I will explain the justification for what's happened. In that, okay, yeah, we'll get into this. I did the project that I've been trying a lot in the Lake District, Helvellyn project, and then more recently did the Midnight project, which I've been trying a lot in Ticino. And these were two climbs which personally meant an awful lot to me, and I put like a lot more into these projects than I probably have in projects in the past. And so in terms of on the scale of like newsworthiness within climbing, they're probably pretty newsworthy. However, especially with the one at home, the Helvellyn project, I felt like actually with both of them, actually, I found that they've been like incredibly profound experiences that I feel like I've had. And I feel like I've learned loads trying them. And I feel like they represent a lot to me that are maybe features of climbing, which I think can be like quite helpful for everyone. Maybe I've learned a lot in trying them. And I think they maybe like represent things that I think would be like, I want to think carefully about how I share them to share the news to everyone. And essentially, I guess this podcast is me going to try and explain some of that. And I would worry that if I just publish it the next day on Instagram, like I probably have done in the past. Yeah, I've done that at times, like of just like publishing things straight away and like kind of jumping on the news, that essentially these climbs will be reduced to here's a climb and this is the grade. Kind of, I haven't actually decided on grades and stuff entirely. Basically, these climbs mean a lot more to me than partly like the valuable parts of them haven't necessarily just been me doing them as well. It would be a shame to paint like for all of these pieces to be lost to the newsworthy nature of a climb and its grade. And so I was kind of like, oh, okay. For one, I felt pretty tired. I've been quite busy since doing them and haven't really like taken much time to like reflect on them. I've taken a bit more time now. And so kind of like hadn't really just like found the time to like kind of really make my mind up about them. Yeah. So basically was just like not really feeling in a rush to like publicize it, which was also quite nice personally, because I didn't really feel a need to rush into publicizing it, which like has been quite comforting for me, because I've sometimes had the concern within my climbing that obviously part of it is extrinsically motivation. And it's been nice to dive into these like processes of like projecting new things and like not feel like I'm looking for the affirmation of others upon completing them necessarily in that process. It's been like quite comforting to me, like, oh, okay, this is definitely like something that I wanted to be doing. And like, I have been pretty like intrinsically motivated by this, because I don't really like feel like I'm like, they've been a valuable experience for me. I've been I feel incredibly fortunate to have had that despite maybe not publicizing it to everyone. But yes, I mentioned it to the community of Patreons. And why did I necessarily do that? Well, for one, actually accompanied it with a mini podcast episode where I described, this was subsequent to doing the Helvellyn project, where I described where my thinking was at. And also was quite open and transparent, I guess, about I'm still figuring out my feet and like kind of unsure about things. And if there's one thing I've learned about the internet, maybe this like confirms it. It's not a very forgiving place. So if I had like uncertainties and doubts about how I was communicating something, I don't have that much faith that it will be like necessarily accepted on the internet, but the community of patrons we have are like really friendly and really supportive, really interested. And we've like kind of spoken a lot on the podcast about that. So I feel a lot more comfortable to be quite personable with those people. And so publicize that on there, which people appreciated, inspired some discussion. But I also did that in the knowledge that if I was like, oh, okay, this is what I explained, but like I've had like these ideas about it, they're not going to be like, oh, well, you said when you published this that it was 9A and like hold me to like a bunch of details. I actually didn't give any grades or anything, but like...
Nor did I ask, I'd like to add.
Yeah, thank you, Sam. So yeah, that's why I kind of like put the stuff on there and it seemed to be greatly appreciated. Now, I do understand the point of like putting climbing media behind a paywall, but I think it comes to the more general question of like, does a climber owe anything to, in this scenario, do I owe the climbing community instant on the pulse updates with what I'm doing? I'm not sure if I do. Like, I understand, like, obviously, if I never publicize anything that I did, that I wouldn't be a very good professional climber. Maybe not the best professional climber, but I feel like the obligation falls short of my sponsorship obligations as opposed to necessarily like, yeah, obligations to the climb community. I don't know. What do you think about that?
So my view is that I don't think any climber owes it to the general public to announce what they've done. I mean, as like when we spoke to Gresham back in the day, it used to be you weren't allowed to say what you've done. Like everyone else had to say it for you, which I think that's taking things too far.
Yeah, but I'm just waiting for everyone to share this news for me.
I don't think anyone knows anyone. And it's the same thing as like, I think there's also a debate in there about kind of just paywalled content in general. And I think... I was tempted to go on there at some point. I did try and make a UKB account to try and slightly explain my thought process. But in general, I love the sort of Patreon model, I think is lovely because it is literally a pay what you can scheme in a sense. We put a lot of work and hours in to put out a product and we don't even put any adverts in it to try and keep it really, really as good as we can, totally for free, totally available. And we like to give a little bit of extra content for a few people who basically keep the whole podcast running. Because if it wasn't for the patrons, I couldn't justify the amount of hours I put in editing every week. You know, just like after a while, I'd be like, I just can't justify doing this anymore. So the patrons basically keep the whole thing going. And so all we do is we give them a little bit of extra, you know, like content, you know, times like this where, you know, to borrow a sort of modern term, the Patreon Discord and the patrons in general is a like safe space for you to talk about whatever it is that's currently on your mind, knowing that they're all really supportive people, so much so they're actually supporting, you know, from the wallet, the ultimate side of support. So you know that they're not going to kind of hold you accountable and go full savage. Unfortunately, I think paid content is going to be here to stay. But personally, I prefer that to advertised content because I hate being advertised too. And you've got to have one or the other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
I guess it's kind of like lesser of two evils. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of people out there who'd be like, no, I want to hear all of the content and I don't care about listening to adverts every like half an hour. But I find it really jarring. And I think there's so much due diligence you got to do to advertise to people to know for sure you're not advertising a whole lot of rubbish.
Or you just, sweep it under the carpet and
just take the money. Yeah. And so, the thing that I would be so afraid of would be advertising something that later turns out to be a bit fraudulent. And then be like, great, well, I advertised it to people that I actually, you know, that people who support me and listen to this podcast and support us. And we've literally advertised something to them that is crap and we didn't figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if attitudes have changed just with the convenience of media and in like more modern forms of climbing media, like through YouTube or through
totally
like Instagram. I mean, like, you see it in like climbing. I mean, climbing podcasts is quite a new format, but like climbing films, you don't really get feature length films like Between the Trees, which was, I think we maybe mentioned, was is probably our shared favorite climbing film or something. The climbing films where you'd maybe like buy it on DVD or you'd purchase a film in more modern, but not super modern times. You'd buy it on Vimeo or something, where the money you pay goes to the filmmaker. Now it's much faster paced, like much more volume. You obviously don't pay anything. You don't directly transfer money from yourself to like YouTubers, but it fits into that advertising model. But it's really affected the like climbing film landscape in like such a big way. I basically wonder if the same thing is happening just generally with climbing media. I wonder when, like you referenced back in the day when Gresh was talking about you don't publicize the things that you do, maybe they're in magazines. Do people complain about the magazines not all being free? I'm not sure.
No, don't think so. I think it's an accepted medium, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's just funny, like, yeah, which mediums are accepted and which aren't.
Yeah.
I kind of can maybe understand frustration if there is a certain, and it's very understandable that maybe people would have the expectation that climbing media is pretty up to date and readily available for free everywhere. And I think personally, I just didn't really feel ready to fully openly communicate my climbing endeavors with the wider internet. Well, I'll just accept responsibility for that. Sorry, you got dragged into that, Sam. Yeah, that's my bad.
No. If anything, I'm the one getting the teeth more, because I think there are some people on there that see it as you just don't want to talk about it, and I twist your arm into it for commercial reasons.
Oh, wow. That's not the case at all.
Wow, but there you go.
Yeah.
And I've only paid him a certain amount of money to say that.
Yeah. UKB folk, I can only apologize if you feel disappointed and that I haven't communicated all of this for free anyway. Yeah, wasn't feeling particularly like I wanted to talk about it so publicly straight away. I think I'm quite happy to say that as well. Like, I don't think I feel an obligation to, yeah, publicize everything I do all the time.
Yeah, I think it's trying to figure out a way where you can talk about a really profound experience that goes beyond a number and a letter. Because you know that is where the media will latch onto it, and that is where people will get, you know, people get wound up about it. And then if someone goes and climbs it, then maybe they decide they got a different idea of what that number and letter will be. These problems like devolve into just arguments over grades, and the actual problem is completely lost. Like, the climb is gone. Now, there are a few examples of climbs around, which actually is more of a, the only focal point about that climb is people disagree on the number and the letter, and the poor climb itself is basically forgotten. Because everyone's just fighting over what grade it should be. And I think that there's a real benefit in either not grading or grading like way down the line of just trying to avoid that, like trying to avoid that like squabble.
Yeah, no. And I mean, I think we briefly touched upon this when we spoke about it privately, about the whole idea of not grading stuff as well, because that is quite a polarizing thing as well. Like, I think so, yeah.
And I'm broadly against not grading things. I will say that.
I think maybe I am as well. No, I didn't say I'm against it. I would say I'm a lot more neutral. But like, I've always chosen to grade things. Sometimes it takes me a while to make up my mind. But I think there is value in a somewhat relatable system of difficulty. But I can really respect why people choose not to, because of like how much it dissuades from the climb itself, and how much how much it is so easy to fixate on the grade.
It's funny, but we could have a perfectly workable system where whoever does a climb first just gives a rough grade. You know, you could say, I've done these two projects, they're both harder than 8C, that's all I'm going to say. I've no idea after that. Like, like, and like in a sense, like, how can you know? Like, it's so many like movable things. You just don't know exactly what was happening on the day you did it, or exactly how well it suits you. Or maybe someone comes along and like goes, oh, do you realize the Mad Rock drone heel fits incredibly well into this space? It's way easier for me because of like a piece of equipment that you don't have or that you didn't use. Like, or people just come out with a new beta. Like, it's kind of like whoever first does something.
I find it hard to believe you're not getting advertisement money for that, by the way.
I don't even wear them anymore. Don't even wear them anymore.
I'm joking. Sorry.
No, the Mad Rock drone heel is
comically effective.
It's a bit like the Anasazi cheaped heel. When it works, it works hilariously well.
Yeah.
If you can get like a little chip in a rock or something, that sounds like I've chipped it myself.
Keep digging that hole.
If you find like an edge and then you stick that groove over that edge, like sometimes you can basically get the shoe stuck on it.
Yeah, you got to worry more about your knee than the heel coming off.
Yeah. At which point, it's like the shoe is doing all of the work and you're not doing the work, so it feels like cheating. Yes, I have no affiliation with Mad Rock. I don't currently wear Mad Rocks, although I have worn drones in the past. But anyway, yeah. So as I was saying, there's this weird assumption that like whoever is the first to do something should know what the grade is. But how could you know? You only know like a rough grade, don't you? You've got a best guess.
Yeah. No, that is the thing. Like, one, it's really hard to know like stylistically how things suit you, especially if you like a climb on a project which like hasn't had other people trying it.
Mm.
Then there's also the doubt of like, oh, maybe there are other methods. Maybe I miss things, which are so easily done. And boulders only really get easier without whole breakages. It's nearly always the case that just more climbers and more minds on the job come up with better sequences and like refinements. So yeah, and it's been interesting actually, like, because I've had some discussions in the few days I had in Ticino after I climbed the midnight thing, met Dave Graham and like climbed with a few like American climbers who like have got to know over the years, and generally just like discussions came up over these things. Kim Marshner as well had done a new thing in Bavona, which we were having a session on, and generally there was consensus that everyone's given it their best guess. You'd like look at that crew and you'd be like, wow, these are probably some of the most experienced boulderers ever, for sure, as a subset of like Daniel was there, Jimmy was there, Dave was there. These are like very experienced boulderers, been at the top of the bouldering game for like decades. You'd think if anyone like had some like clarity and if there was a concrete system that was like foolproof, they'd be the people who'd have some understanding of it. And they were like, I know less now than I did. Like, I naively thought I knew more, like had a better judgment of this when I was younger than I do now, I'm guessing. So like, yeah, I think maybe like malleability and flexibility in like that system, it's not a very lenient system. And it's like, so I guess like the weird thing is it is a climber's best guess to be a description of a climb. And yet it doesn't really seem like it's treated like a feature of a climb, like an opinion of a feature of the climb, as opposed to like a testament of the climber itself, which is quite weird. And I think I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. I see what you mean. It's like, it's almost like a slight on the climber to downgrade a problem, even though it had nothing to do with the climber. It was the rock that's downgraded, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like, feels like it's scrutinized as a part of a climber's character, as opposed to a climber just sharing an honest opinion about a piece of rock. And so I'm definitely very much have felt like the influence of that, and that I'm probably like hesitant to grade things sometimes. There's obviously like the egotistical side of grade, which I'm aware of and like kind of feel the influences of as well. Yeah, I think it's strange how much it's now associated with the climber and not the climbs.
I've just been wondering these last few weeks, particularly because you've been doing these projects and not really sure what to do with it. I've been thinking, you know, what would I do in your shoes? I think if I did a lot of first ascenting, I'd just put grade bracket on it. I'd just go like, because in a sense, I think we should almost allow a standard deviation of one if I did a climb that I was relatively sure was 8B plus, say, or I thought it was 8B plus, I could just say 8B to 8C. And then people could try it. And then if people thought, oh, actually, it's a bit harder than Sam thought, they could give it an 8C without the sort of taboo of upgrading. Oh, you can't upgrade. And the same is true, is that they could do, oh, no, it's a bit easier than Sam thought, 8B, without it being like, oh, they've downgraded Sam's climb. So, no, it's within the grade range. You know, obviously, it would be a bit embarrassing if it was like three grades out, but, you know, more fool me if that was the case. But, like, I think grade brackets would make total sense.
Well, interesting you say that, because we kind of like scheduled in this podcast to just to talk about the projects I've done more recently, and I haven't graded them, sorry, but this was kind of like my suggestion. I was like, oh, I'm probably just going to like suggest them to be like, kind of, it's probably either this or this or around this. Also, the way in which like, so I've been in correspondence with Nikki quite a lot, and he's been talking about the climbs he's done in Northern Italy, and he of course doesn't grade the problems he's done, but he's very happy to share his experience with them. So be like, it's this style, I think it suits me well, it took me this many sessions, or like this move is hard about it, and I've climbed with Nikki, so like, okay, yeah, he's pretty strong in this style, maybe he struggles in this style. If there's this kind of style of problem that took him 8 sessions, probably really hard, I can kind of get a gauge from that. And so I was like, oh, I'll probably just do that with these climbs. And then maybe it doesn't become solely a climb, the achievement of doing said climb and a number, but I can let a bit of the experience shine through, which I think we should maybe get onto, because we've spoken a lot about grades.
For
not wanting grades to steal the limelight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, talk about that for 45 minutes. Yeah, yeah. Tell it. So... obviously you've spoken quite a lot about the Lakes project, which you have a name for.
Yes, the name is Spots of Time. Yeah,
which... so you have kind of, you've spoken about that, which is still going to be available on the Patreon, so
controversially
but yeah, you know, at least now we're publicly, you know, you're publicly announcing you've done it. So hopefully that'll be enough. But did you say there was potentially going to be a film about that one?
Yeah. So, well, it's all a bit up in the air. I have Sam Lawson, the guy who does Wedge, came up actually the day I did it. It's quite quite spontaneous and quite fortuitous, perhaps.
So
have some nice footage of that. And a lot of footage of trying it, and then similarly have a camera footage of doing midnight with a handycam, home style video, but I
love
quite
it.
Like it.
Love
I
it.
I kind of like it's got a lot of character actually.
Are you going to stitch them both? Do you think this could come out as a video at some point together, or would they be separate?
Well, I'm not sure entirely. I've been talking a lot to some of the folk at Patagonia about trying to communicate a bit more of a story around them, and hopefully try and, I feel I actually really like the podcast format and the way you can like communicate quite openly. So have really liked the podcast format for communicating ideas, speaking quite transparently. A big part of my like experience trying these boulders has been the places it have put me, my appreciation for the spaces in which I'm climbing. And I feel like filming format is a pretty nice way to articulate that. So kind of like would be nice to kind of communicate that through the filming medium as well. And so, and Patagonia, the folk at Patagonia have been pretty motivated by that idea. So I've just been having some early discussions with them about piecing something like that together.
That'd be nice, because I imagine that would be that'd be another good opportunity to get a lot of it out there. But I was just thinking, for our we haven't really spoken at all about your midnight project. Well, obviously we have between podcasts, but like not since you've done it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I've spoken to you individually about it, have I?
No, I don't think so. Not since you've done it, I don't think.
Well, how do you want me to just go for a little chronological summary of my last month?
Yes.
Would that be good?
I mean, yeah, you can take out just the traveling bits.
Oh, yeah. I was going to be pretty much just the climbing.
Or your breakfasts you had.
Oh, I don't know. I've been having some pretty good breakfasts. Okay. So I think it was probably, anyway, best part of a month ago. Okay, over the winter. Oh, wait, where should I start? Got back from... I climbed in Bird and claimed in last November, came to Chino for a short trip to try Midnight with Sean.
Yes.
He's spoken about that on podcast, right?
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Arrived back from that, and that was a pretty special trip for me in that I'd have the two contrasts. So just a bit of backstory, but it feels relevant. So bear with me because you probably know some of this stuff. I'd stuck it out in Finland through some awful weather, 2.5 weeks of just condensed rock and then really cold weather. I was having skin problems and just not really enjoying the actual in the moment climbing sessions, and definitely felt a little rigid in my goal setting, because I'd had some phases of quite organic natural motivation that had inspired me to be right, okay, I'm going to set myself this goal and I'm going to be quite disciplined to achieve it, which I've often done in many walks of life. I've done it a lot in my climbing, done it a lot within academia. So obviously there are times when discipline and rigidity in your goal setting goes against the grain of what you are enjoying in each moment. So essentially the clash between ambition and passion, which I think maybe my tolerance for has been quite strongly on the ambition side at times. I've definitely always been quite fortunate in that I have had great passion for climbing. And so there have been very few scenarios where that has ever felt to knock up against each other. Do you kind of get the idea that I'm saying?
Yeah.
We have ambition within climbing and dreams, and then we have our passion for climbing. And at times when you set yourself very rigid goals, they misalign. And you can divert fully out of your passion and just not want to be there and not be enjoying your experience. People can burn out. And it's probably more commonly seen in really long-term projects, right? But I imagine that's generally just the more time you spend outside of that passion-fueled path of climbing, the more likely you are just to burn out and lose interest. And so I basically had been thinking about that quite a lot, because that trip to Finland, and probably even more so my trip a year ago in spring when I was trying Midnight and I was out to Switzerland for almost 3 months, were both times where I've really felt a conflict between this goal setting and my real attachment to kind of doing these things and my passion for climbing. So in the aftermath of that trip, it was quite a spontaneous suggestion from Sean. He was like, oh, why don't we just climb in Switzerland and Italy and kind of just see what we're keen to try, kind of thing. So it's quite a spontaneous trip, and I got an Interrail ticket and just zipped into Europe, and it was kind of I think 2.5 weeks or so where we just would wake up and see what we wanted to try. And I felt no expectations from that trip. It felt really relaxed and it was a lot of fun. And it was really funny because it made me realize that a lot of the things that I were doing was quite wasn't necessarily, lots of the way I was approaching climbing and the ways in which it felt dissatisfying or kind of maybe potentially problematic at times was actually independent from what I was doing in each day to day, but more the attitude I was maybe bringing to it as well. It was interesting because when I was on that shorter trip into Chino, I ended up trying the Midnight Project for I can't remember how many sessions we had on it, maybe 5-6 sessions or something. As much as I'd been trying it when I was there in spring and feeling pretty burnt out and not necessarily wanting to be there, I didn't really feel like I'd have to be there if I didn't want to be. It was we were only there because it was okay, what can we climb on today? What do we want to climb on today? And we were pretty inspired by it. And it was cool to show it to Sean, had a lot of energy to be trying it. And it was kind of interesting, maybe this attitude of rigidly sticking to what you've pre-prescribed for yourself is maybe like kind of sapping a bit of the just joy out of climbing in moments. And obviously it's rare that that was like a nice scenario where I was, okay, this is a goal that I wanted to do anyway. And I feel a lot of passion within it, but it was really nice to like kind of refine passion there in that project that I was inspired by. And it kind of like rekindled some motivation for it. But generally that trip made me like think, and I like reflected over my year. And I think like I do really want to explore this adventurous side of climbing where like I follow my motivations a little more. I feel like I can be overly disciplined as well. And it's like confusing because I really like training. So a big part of that is obviously I train generally towards things, but there is a certain degree of just intrinsic love for training as well. And I like really get a lot out of the satisfaction of the training process. And it is all confusing because I find like the process of self-development quite satisfying, quite rewarding in like a physical sense as well. So like it's quite hard to like figure out, but like I'm just kind of trying to be a little bit more relaxed about things. And that attitude has been quite nice. So on the back of that trip, I had loads of inspiration for the Midnight Project. And part of that had been is basically in like the year and a half before then, there's like probably the two most obvious holds. There's like a really obvious left-hand slot that just looks like it should be the start hold. And I kind of like was always trying it from there. But when I like was feeling close to doing it from a higher start, it's like kind of three moves in from that. I was essentially trying to like establish it from that. And quickly when Sean was trying it, I kind of had feelings about it, but he kind of agreed that it would be better if it was just open from one start. And the low one was more obvious. It's not actually a sit start. They're kind of just face high kind of thing. But he also couldn't reach the higher start holds that I was using. So the like grind and siege that I put myself into a year ago was from the higher start. And I got pretty close to doing it from there. But it was cool to go back. And I mean, I'd had a really hard summer of training and see a lot of like physical progression. And it felt like much steadier. The moves felt much steadier from there. And at the end of that trip in December, it kind of like felt feasible from the lower start, which was like kind of amazing because a year ago when I was like trying that loads, it felt one of the hardest things that I'd put time into, like where I was trying it from. And it just felt like pretty futuristic for me, a long way down the line in a style that I knew like suited me really well from the lower start. So it was like kind of really quite motivating to see that like physical progression as well. And so over the winter, that was kind of my like main focus of training. And it was cool because I generally like climbing quite slowly and functioning on like small holds where you like find a lot of stability in positions and like move quite statically. I find it quite like a satisfying style. And that is exactly what this Midnight thing is. They're like really like, yeah, they're really small, kind of like they are kind of rounded, but tiny. So like you do put a lot of pressure on your fingertips as well. I'm not going to say it's good on your skin, but I actually don't think it's terrible. And anyway, I found that style really satisfying and it was like really fun to train it. And I haven't really like found anything other than that project in a while, which is wow. Okay. The thing I really need to get better at is already the stuff that I'm good at. And that's quite rare and rare to find that in like an outdoor climb that suits you so well and is a project you're inspired by. And I think it's a style which maybe hasn't been that represented in hard bouldering for a while as well. Generally, I don't know, in that such a pure kind of style, I haven't like seen so many things like that. And so, yeah, that was pretty special to find. And I found like throughout the whole winter of training, I never really slowed down my motivations. Like I was just seeing progression in that, which was the first time I've like kind of really seen that in a while. Was able to train like really hard. It kept being fun, which was amazing. The more I was training, the more fun I was having. And it was kind of like really nice. And I think a big part of that sorry to mingle these stories together, was that in the past, often when I've had like a training season, they've been very distinct from my like outdoor projecting season. So it's kind of been like a long trip, and then I'll have three, four month training block. And usually I'd find I'd be like chomping at the bit partway through the training block of being like, get me outside on the rocks kind of thing. Even if I'm like enjoying the training. But it was quite a special scenario, and definitely the most like content I've felt to be like living in the Lake District in more recent years. I definitely felt the most stability in living anywhere I have in the last few years, because there was this project at home, which is the Helvellyn project, now named Spots of Time. And I first found that May 2023. Just when I got back from Switzerland, I'd been like looking for a really ambitious project further afield, had found it in like midnight and things like that. And then was really kind of burnt out from that. And then it was pretty special to like find it on my doorstep. And I think I'd been like exhausted from traveling and been looking a bit like stability or feeling of home. And this boulder, really, this Helvellyn project, the local project in the Lake District, which is the landscape I grew up in, really like felt to like ground me in the lakes, because I could now like combine like my goals and objectives and training for that, and the enjoyment, the just intrinsic enjoyment I have for training, whilst also like satiate or like scratching that itch of outdoor projecting and keeping like attuned to like climbing on rock, and like having like an experience of that projecting process that isn't like so artificially constructive. I've done like a lot of like psychological preparation in training blocks for like projects, but it's different to when you're actually trying a project. And so I was kind of able to like have that projecting like process go on alongside my training as well. And it kind of just felt like this little bubble of a real time of contentment this winter. I mean, we've had some pretty terrible weather. Anyone in the UK will probably agree over this winter. I felt super happy to like be training in those wet spells, and then the dry days, I'll go out and try this project. And I'm quite fortunate in that it's quite like finger intensive. Stylistically, it's kind of like very different to midnight. You kind of on really quite small holds, but they're quite flat. And so you've got to like kind of move relatively quickly between small flat edges. So it doesn't like suit me. I don't actually know how well it suits me. I think part of it suits me well in that you're operating on small holds. But there are definitely things that don't, in that you've got to move quite quickly and be like quite a lot of contact strength, some catch heels and things, which haven't suit me so well. So and I ended up actually like not really using. It's hard to know exactly how well it suits me, but it was like kind of really nice to explore. It was kind of like a nice bit of variation in my style as well. You can't just solely static crimp your whole time. So anyway, I found this like very like harmonious balance between training and projecting that felt really special. And so actually the reason I called it Spots of Time was, a few weeks before I did it, my good friend and former podcast guest Hamish Potker came up to the lakes for a reading week. He teaches in schools, and he actually sprained his ankle right at the start of the trip at the Bowderstone, and so was on crutches. And so we would kind of just, we did some board training, we figure out what to do. We went to the Wordsworth Museum, because you can actually see Rydal Mount, Wordsworth's house, the house he grew up in, not grew up in, he lived in, from the house I grew up in. So it's like kind of right next to my house. Anyway, we went to the Wordsworth Museum. I was like reading some of his poems. And my mum had actually been reading this poem about spots of time. And there was obviously the poem, but then also like some description, I think a letter that Wordsworth wrote to Coleridge about this idea. And essentially, I think it's like relatively poetic and so up for interpretation, but kind of, it was kind of like presenting this idea of there are like distinct moments in our life which kind of condense larger fields of learning, basically. And Wordsworth describing lots of these like being based around like experiences in the natural world. And I felt like it kind of encapsulated a lot of my process with this climb, in that I felt I learned a lot about my like relationship with my like home landscape and like the places in which I climb, in that I went it took me about, like, I think about 30 days or something, this spots of time thing. And I became really familiar with the place. It felt like to really reconnect me back to the Lake District. And I felt just really content in my, like, nostalgic landscape. And so it was a little testament to that. So that's where the name Spots of Time came into it. And then, yeah, so basically that process went pretty well. I kind of initially started trying it in start of February, I think. And the first few sessions was kind of like dialing back in, kind of like learning some vague body tension again. And then I knew I felt better on the holds. And so, like, as I start to learn the positions more, it just started piecing together. And then I kind of had, like, some struggles with, like, bad weather. But, yeah, in the end, it kind of came together quite nicely. And, yeah, it was a pretty special experience. And it was actually quite funny in the aftermath of doing that. So I've mostly tried that boulder by myself. And it's very hard to tell how difficult it is for me, because lots of time, I think it took me, like, 10 days to, like, figure out the sequence I then used. And I was also initially trying it throughout summer, didn't really know how well it suited me. And I changed my method quite a few times. So I kind of, like, really lost my bearings on it. But it was really, like, it was quite special. And I had this similar experience on the Midnight Project, in that it was kind of strangely anticlimactic, but, like, also really comforting, that it wasn't like this euphoric moment of, like, completion of this project. Like, I think, yeah, you referenced earlier, you spoke to me afterwards before you knew that I'd done it. We'd recorded a podcast and I think I told you afterwards or something. And I looked, like, pretty tired and pretty flat. And I think I was just physically very tired at those kind of points. It was kind of, like, quite nice to not feel like it was all bells and whistles. I, like, really loved the process of trying that climb, because it felt really special in that it was so local to me. It's like one of the most local crags I have, that I knew that my family home is in the Lake District. I knew that I'd be spending a lot of time there in coming years. I felt like no rush to do it. I loved the fact that that project was there and that process was there whilst I was training, that I almost, like, didn't really necessarily want that process to not be there. I loved having it there, trying it. I really wasn't attached to doing it. I wanted to do it in that there was, like, a completion of this projecting process. And obviously, like, you go with an objective to do this climb, but in terms of actually doing it, yeah, I loved it being there as a project. So
that's the medium in which you interact with it as well. It's like, it feels very analogous to reading a really, really good book you're absolutely loving. It's that you don't want it to end, but you also can't stop reading because it's really good. Your way in which you interact with the thing is to read it, but you know that by reading it, you're hastening its end.
Yeah, that is a very good analogy. Yeah, and it was like that. I think it was like finishing a good book. There was a certain, like, real appreciation that obviously you could read that book and it was really special to, like, read that book, but there's a certain, like, there's almost a certain loss.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Sadness upon closing because that final page.
What you've said there is that you had this really amazing winter, training for something that you were really psyched for, climbing on something you're really psyched for, a rock that was really near your house. And it's amazing to do both these things, but by doing them, you know that they're not going to be there to hold your hand next winter.
Mm. Yeah. And I definitely have felt that. I'm still figuring out I'm still finding my feet on, like, where I'm really based. That felt like a really big factor of, like, me contently spending time in the lakes as well. I really love that landscape, but, like, I'm probably going to be more hesitant to spend 3 months there or have, yeah, I think it was 3 months there, again, without that kind of thing around. I have done most of the climbs that I know about in the lakes, and having, like, outdoor climbing around, like, around me when I'm training, I think feels like a really valuable thing just for motivation for me. It definitely has been, like, a big influence over my, yeah, contentment in one geographical place, because the very nature of constantly pursuing climbing is it has very little, like, geographical inertia. yeah, so it was really a special experience. Yeah, upon doing it, it was definitely, like, felt like a time for reflection. I'd definitely been putting off a lot of trip sorting. I had, like, a van to convert, that I'd kind of just been putting off, trying to like psychologically prepare and be rested for this boulder. And I had a couple of weeks before I was going away to Switzerland, which I'd had of this trip in like mind, this like date, because it was when I could next go into Europe, and it was 15th of March, I think. And you're kind of pushing it with warm seasons at that point. As it turned out, I was quite fortunate because it was just a washout, I think, before then anyway. I then had like this deadline. So I was kind of just busy converting my van. That was pretty fun, but pretty tiring. I just never really stopped. I was kind of like still doing my training, and I was pretty exhausted in that like stint, and kind of just never really took the time to like process much or recover much. And was so excited to go away just because I'd been really motivated by this midnight thing the whole time. Arrived in Switzerland and I was totally knackered. I felt awful. I felt awful in my body, but like really happy to be there. I've kind of had that quite consistently over the last month. I physically felt really good. There are many things where I felt like very good in my body, but I felt like pretty tired at times. Yeah, definitely felt like a lot of motivation for climbing and a lot of just contentment, but definitely just like tired. And so I've been having to take it pretty easy. I've definitely been resting a lot and kind of like having shorter sessions and kind of feeling more energized generally now. But anyway, arrived in Switzerland. I'm terrible at driving. Some people are really good at long drives. I'm terrible at it. I have a pretty low driving tolerance and it just wrecks me.
You just get really exhausted.
I just get exhausted. Maybe just sitting completely still for a day, like driving down, obviously, the length of the UK, and then from like Calais to Switzerland. And it just like totally wrecks me. I think my posture goes to the dogs, and so like my traps and shoulders and everything. I just felt like really tired and really like not with it in my body. But anyway, I arrived in Switzerland, obviously, despite knowing that I felt terrible, not really sleeping much. Because arrived late at night. The next day I was like, yeah, I'll have a chuck on midnight. Why not? I mean, yeah.
You can't help yourself, can you? You never can. I'm the same. I know that after a long drive and travel that like I'll be tired, but I just, yeah, I always get on something too hard.
A little reacquaintance session, but it was kind of good. It was like a bit too warm and I was just dialing back into the moves. I didn't feel super good, but I was kind of really short session of at least pulling on in positions, like kind of doing some of the moves. And I could tell that the training I'd been doing had been like pretty good. I didn't necessarily like, it wasn't necessarily that I felt like sharp and with it, but I just felt more comfortable with my fingers in these positions. Yeah, I kind of just knew that like it had been a valuable season of training. Went on it the next day, again, when I was feeling a bit more with it and started to go much better. I think I did the moves then that day and was kind of, yeah, really doing the final fine tunings, because it's always, I don't know if you've had this when you've like tried something, done like a season of training, and then you get back onto it and there's almost a reacquaintance of progress you've made in like specific training measures influence a little bit how you move, and there's kind of like a bit of like redial back in. And I was just being really conservative, having shorter sessions and those kind of things. But I was feeling like, after that, it was kind of psychologically a good session. I was like, I'm feeling pretty good for this. And then climbed elsewhere the following day, took a rest day, went back to midnight, and started feeling pretty good. And I got through the lower moves. Like it adds like the free moves into like the stand start, like the higher start that I had been trying it on. Basically from that start, the reason why I was always trying it from there is because the first move from the higher start was the hardest one for me a year ago. And you kind of like do an intermediate move and a go again. And often like if I'd get the intermediate well, I'd have a good shot at going again. But it felt so maximal from there that I just didn't feel like I could add anything into it. And the lower start adds quite a lot into it and a lot of time on the right hand, which is then super intense. I then on my like that session back, I like kind of got into that higher start and got the intermediate and fell going again left hand 4 times, which I was like already, I was like, wow, that's amazing. Like I feel so much better in this. But it was like, and I've been doing quite a bit of some of the psychology work that I've been working on with Hazel a couple of years ago. And I kind of like had a certain degree of confidence, but yeah, it felt, I had a similar feeling of, I've got an open-ended trip. I'm actually really enjoying trying it. It was kind of like nice to go back there and just feel pretty motivated. I kind of like had a bit of like a giddy childlike excitement for climbing again. And so I was like kind of in a really nice position in that I was like, oh, I've got an open-ended trip. I don't really feel like I have to be doing it kind of thing. And so I rested well, kind of had some relatively I think a couple of rest days, which is quite rare for me. And I was feeling in a very relaxed place. Sam had been climbing really well as well. And so it had been like quite a nice just group dynamic. There was a filming project I was helping, like doing some guiding with in Brioni, keeping busy but resting well, and kind of like it wasn't really getting in my head as well. And then, yeah, I went back and it was kind of like a relatively spontaneous day in that I'd been helping doing some guiding of some filming on previous days. And then I was like, oh, okay, I feel rested and the weather looks pretty nice in the afternoon. A bit of a breeze, quite good for me anyway. It wasn't too cold. Sam actually had some like a pretty bad migraines and things, so couldn't come. But then, I ended up heading over there anyway. Don't worry, I've got footage. this is different, Sam Pratt. It was kind of like felt a pretty relaxed evening. I definitely like felt pretty low expectations, but felt really well rested and really relaxed, which is generally the way in which I've always felt I climb best anyway. And it was one of the most magical sessions I've ever had. It was cool in that warming up, I felt so good. I felt just like really present in my body and physically just really good. I had my warm-up tries. I just felt much better on the hold. Had this try, and I think there's a real satisfaction to doing stuff quite well. And I think I've really looked for a bit of this experience. I think I've spoken about it in the past. There's like a real, like quite an amazing phenomenon of like climbing flow where you're almost super clear-minded and you kind of like the moves that you've rehearsed so well, thoroughly thought through, just feels totally intuitive and like your body knows what it's doing. And you kind of like, it almost glows like a bit of a blur and almost feels effortless kind of thing. I definitely found so much satisfaction of being in that headspace. And I'd kind of had this idea that you could find that kind of headspace and like kind of climb in such like a clear, focused way. And yet the physicalities of the climb just be at that level where you climb it flawlessly and like without fault. And yet there's still like the like physical limit, despite no mistakes, kind of is just a limiting factor and it feels like you're physically redlining. And it was pretty cool because I kind of wasn't really sure. I'd never really had that. Always the projects I've done, all the harder things I've done, definitely on like Alphane and especially the go I did it, it felt pretty effortless. And then the spots of time thing as well. Kind of almost the go I did it, it was kind of like, wow, yeah, like not really much went wrong. And it went actually spots of time, yeah, it kind of just goes a bit of a blur and you're like, wow, kind of a bit disbelieving that you did that kind of thing. Anyway, I had this try where like, it was like at the start of my session on this midnight thing, I just felt like to be moving super well, getting everything perfectly. Then there's like a pretty high heel, which you have to like really far out to the right that sometimes feels insecure. And it felt like quite good. And you basically like, once you get the slot from there and take a swing, they're like the most of the harder moves are done. But basically I took this swing, felt like I'd climbed really well, maybe not completely perfectly. I'd slightly maybe misplaced the heel. So I had a little insecurity in it. Up until there, it felt like I'd climbed really well and I kind of had a really clear mind. And I took that swing as well. I don't know. I think maybe it's right. They're really like quite specific holds. They're like super crimpy. And I think like, it's a very slow style. And so I think you kind of, maybe you press like a load of blood out of your fingers because it wasn't cold. I wasn't feeling like I was numbing out. I felt like I was just squeezing all the blood out of my fingers anyway. And I just felt like totally like red. They're much easier moves up there, but I was like totally redlining on these holds. As soon, I just never really expected those moves up top, which like by itself feels so much easier than any of the moves, to feel so like limit. Almost then like had this sensation, which I then attuned to, and then was like, wow, well, I'm here and these moves shouldn't be this hard. Fully just like trying so hard. Probably one of the hardest I've tried when I'm climbing. It was ridiculous. And then my feet were going and I was cutting. Anyway, I got to going over the lip again, which like I have a better sequence going over the lip. Basically, there's kind of your foot can blow the way I was trying over Smear before, but I have a better foot sequence. It picked going over the lip. By itself, I'm convinced is a well easy move. I'd say it's probably like from where I fell off, maybe I'd give it 7A, 7B kind of thing. But I was so redlining in the fingers, like they were just like totally gone. And anyway, it was really cool because, and actually that go felt almost like reflecting on it, almost more special to me now than the need go of actually doing it, in that I was just recalling the total exasperation that I'd had when I'd fallen from the lip a year ago from the higher start. I really questioned this idea of failure and it just felt deflated and just, oh gosh, a bit of despair, which sounds very dramatic. And it was amazing because I fell off and I just simply felt super satisfied, kind of really excited by like the physical like progression, kind of just the sensation of it. I was so excited that I'd had this experience. I was like, maybe I could point to like slightly misplacing a heel, but it was like pretty good. It was like almost a flawless climbing attempt from my experience. And I was like totally just like physically on the limit. It was just like a really fun climbing experience. And I just felt super happy with it. And I was like, wow, I've usually always been relatively relaxed. I'm not like one to like throw tantrums when I like don't do boulders and things. I kind of thought I'd be a little bit frustrated by that. But it gave me like so much confidence that I was doing the right thing. And I was following a bit of my passion for climbing because I was just like, wow, that was so much fun. Didn't feel like there's a part of me of that was like, oh, I could have, should have, would have done that kind of thing. It feels funny because I'm sure that attempt for the rest of my world, the world, and probably myself, if I didn't like reflect on it too much, or like I've done quite a bit of writing about it just from my own mind, would have just like gone forgotten. But I think I took loads of comfort, a lot of reassurance in like nature of my relationship with climbing. That try definitely failed to like teach me the most or represent the more like a more rewarding sensation than the try which like saw me on top of the boulder. But anyway, had that try, was kind of finding it almost hilarious. Then I needed to take a very long break. And I was pretty exhausted, had some snacks, kind of chilled out for quite a long time. I was kind of like wrecked to the point where I was like, or like I tried hard enough to the point where I was like, okay, I'm probably not going to have any more shots of doing this now kind of thing. And so I kind of like felt like I chilled out a little bit, started giving some more tries again, and actually felt really good. I thought physically I'd just be like a bit shot, but I felt physically kind of like after the first couple of tries completely there with it. And then had like one more pretty good try where I think I fell going to the pocket. I was like kind of into the higher start again and was like, oh, okay, yeah, I feel really good. I actually felt really good on the hold again. And then had a pretty long rest, but I was actually almost thinking of stopping. I was like, can I, no. And like one of the things that I'd always learned with that boulder is when you question whether you should give it another try or not, you should probably just not give it another try because you risk kind of like, splitting or like kind of like, it's savage enough that it was like the one more try is just never a good idea kind of thing. Anyway, I don't know. There might be some weird lesson in there. I haven't figured that out. I gave it one more try and it was pretty cool. I mean, like I'd say the other experience was maybe more valuable for me, but I don't know if that's entirely true. Maybe it's a bit, it felt like I climbed it really perfectly. It felt like just nothing went wrong. I felt really good on all the holds. And I still felt like I was trying flipping really hard at the top. Like I felt like I felt it was nice to like feel like kind of really quite with it, quite relaxed, and was, yeah, I had that feeling where I was fully just felt like I was maxing out in my fingers, and yeah, kind of like topped out and was kind of a bit in disbelief. And it was actually really nice. It was kind of like, weirdly, I've never climbed on it. I haven't enjoyed climbing at night so much in more recent times. And so I kind of tried to time it for the afternoon. And it kind of wasn't really, it wasn't particularly dark. It was kind of dusk kind of thing, but I put the spotlight on, which I took up with me anyway. It was kind of nice because I could like still kind of see everything. The moon had just come up. The sun was kind of like had just set. And in Schattenthal, it has like the iconic motorway bridge. It's kind of weirdly beautiful in like a very like strange engineering meets natural world kind of sense. And it was like really peaceful. And there was loads of birds out. And it was just like a really quiet evening in Schattenthal. And it was very magical. So that was a pretty cool one.
Mega. What's lovely about that is that I remember speaking to you after you did Alphane, when it was just like the go you did it, it kind of felt easy.
Yeah.
Whereas like this, that's kind of the experience you want, where like you climb it perfectly, but it still feels really hard. Like that's kind of perfect.
Yeah. And I didn't know, like with trying things like Alphane and things, whether maybe that sense of flow was just physically trying really hard, but you just weren't so attuned to the fact that you were trying really hard. But it was cool in that psychologically, I felt just so relaxed and like clear of head on this midnight thing. And yet was just, my body was totally physically just like battling it out, which is an aggressive language, but like it was just like really on the cusp, which is quite a cool feeling. And I feel like so fortunate to have found that on a project, has inspired me so much, also suited me so well. It's kind of like, yeah, it feels like a pretty special one. So yeah, that was pretty epic. And then I kind of like explained what's happened since then, and so that takes me to now.
And that takes you to now, and all that, and all that took, yeah, what was that, about 40 minutes?
a 40 minute monologue.
But we got there, and I think if ever you were we needed a monologue from you, it was now, because you've done so much in such a short amount of time. But big question, have you come up with a name for it yet?
I haven't, no. But yeah, no, I haven't. Yeah, I ought to. It's definitely not going to be called Midnight. You'll be relieved to hear.
Yes, no, the one thing I wanted to avoid was not just Midnight. But I have a suggestion, which
please
ignore my suggestion. Do not feel any. I was thinking of the gloaming.
The gloaming.
Yes, gloaming is, I think it's an old Scottish word meaning dusk. It's that time, which, as you explained, is the time you did it. When, like,
did you even know that I did it at that time of day?
Yeah, you said, you just said.
Oh, okay. No, yeah. But before this? Or did you just think of the gloaming?
I thought of it then. And I think...
that's off the dome.
It's exactly the sort of time when you did it. But also it goes quite nicely because it's next to midnight. So it gets you get to keep the... The theme,
the gloaming.
Yeah.
That's pretty nice. I mean, I'm not going to like make absolute confirmations right now, but maybe you've just named it.
Maybe. You just leave it, put it on your shortlist. But
yeah. I do like that.
But I shan't be at all offended if you call it something else. But yeah, that was just what I was thinking. Because I was thinking when you were saying it, I had a feeling you hadn't named it. So I was trying to think.
Yeah, hence I've been referring to it as midnight, which you're right, would be sad.
That would be sad, because I don't want to start this like trend with like Alphane, because I was kind of a bit the same with Alphane. It was like a bit of a shame because it's like Alphane moon is right next to it. So I've suggested if anyone does the right hand finish of Alphane, they should call it moon.
yeah, just to keep on the but that is a thing. Yeah,
there's a struggle.
You can think too much about naming as well.
You can. Well, I think you've nailed the lakes one. You've nailed that. That's a great name.
Oh, I'm glad. Yeah, pretty chuffed with that one, actually.
Yeah. It's nice to know, you know, to feel like, yeah, I got that one right.
It feels like, yeah, encapsulate a bit of what the boulder means to you as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a bit of a monologue. Apologies for that. But, yeah, maybe a good time for it. Was there anything else? I'm sure there are probably other things I wanted to talk about, but that was more just, yeah. What came up?
That's pretty good. I reckon, should we leave that one there?
Ah, yeah. I was going to mention as well, because I know loads of people ask, and we kind of spoke about it earlier, about grading things. And with these climbs, it was definitely like I came to the same conclusion that probably in speaking about them, I would give like a suggestion of how hard they are. And I've as I've always done with hard climbs, looked for some like peer consensus on what they reckon, which I think is quite good. And like the spots of time climb, I like never really knew how well it suited me, didn't really know if I'd found the best method or like how long I'd really tried it in good condition or bad. So like I kind of like the process of doing that climb, like the way I've always like kind of like graded is based upon other climbers' opinions, but also like other climbs. Mm-hmm. And I haven't had like an awful lot of like really like project mode kind of like experiences, the first probably being Alphane. And I think in some ways that suited me quite well in its body tensiony, but definitely like the holds themselves probably didn't suit me super well in that more open. So it's kind of like hard to know where like your process fits with your style. Also, that wasn't a first ascent, though I did actually use a completely different method to the one that I've been shown. So like there's this element of figuring it out as well. In terms of the process of doing these climbs, I definitely found spots of time was harder for me, partly because maybe it's like harder for me to do in that like, and I'm unsure. I'm not necessarily saying, oh, this climb is harder than Alphane, because I obviously don't know styles, and you definitely move quickly, which suits me less well. But it's probably more on the fingers in that they're like pretty small holds, but then they're also flat holds. Physically, I'm definitely a lot stronger in the fingers and probably like a better climber now than when I did Alphane. And it probably took me more time. But like I said, it's probably more... I basically would anticipate it is either 8C plus or 9A, unless like different sequence gets found or it suits me less well than it expects. But definitely when I did that, it felt harder for me than Alphane did to do. And so maybe if I was like left to my own devices and nobody else was going to try it, I would personally grade it 9A, but I'm kind of like, okay, I'm open-minded to like, oh, maybe people can climb it in a different style. And I kind of like don't really know how well it suits me. I can kind of definitely imagine it suiting people a lot better than it suited me. So we all see. And then the midnight thing.
That's more your style straight up, isn't it?
I think so. I haven't really had like enough people on it to really know, but the people who've tried, I've tried.
I mean, Sean's tried it a decent amount. That's going to tell you quite a bit, isn't it?
Yeah, Sean's tried it a bit. Probably doesn't shoot Sean's style very well. Clem Lachap tried it. He's out here trying Burden as well. Maybe I'll have a chat to him about it. Kim, I tried it with Kim quite a lot. Marshner. And it's been nice. Everyone who's tried it, maybe with the exception of Yannick, has been quite motivated by it. So hopefully we'll get some more people on it and get some consensus. But that one I'm fairly certain suits me a lot better.
So that's probably, for the general climber, that one's probably harder, you reckon?
I'm fairly convinced. As a process of trying a climb, personally, that is a climb that definitely has felt hardest for me and definitely feels like it suits me best. So I'm relatively convinced that is probably quite a lot harder to the general climber than any other climb that I've done. which is quite nice.
But that is nice.
Who knows? People might find different things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dave Graham might kneeball the shit out of it, but I doubt it.
Yeah, that would be tough to find because it doesn't look like typical kneeball terrain. But
it's not kneeball territory, but you never know.
They don't call him the wizard for nothing, do they? So we'll wait and see.
Yeah, yeah. So not out there, not ready to throw out any. Yeah.
Don't we'll need see. To. Don't need
yeah,
to.
Yeah. We'll figure it out. If you're we'll interested in trying them and function climbing around that level, please get on them and let me know what you think.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get millions of uptake to that. But
no, but this is kind of a thing which...
They're not 6C. I mean, it's going to be quite a narrow. It's going to be quite a narrow.
You could try the top-out move. I've fallen off the lip a few times. Yeah, yes. From the lip upwards.
Oh, that was one question I actually had, because for a while you were umming and ahhing about opening spots of time with a sand start as well. Was it an 8B or 8B plus sand start?
Yes.
Still, I mean, unsure?
It's not very obvious where it would start, in that, like, basically the place where you can pull on... like you can, the highest place you can kind of like pull on from a pad, pulls on in quite like, you pull on like a pretty small left-hand crimp, and then like a relatively like, I mean, it's relatively obvious, but it's not like an obvious hold on the wall, right-hand crimp, or the most obvious hold would be like a hold which you don't actually use for the climb at all. So
interesting.
It's kind of like a bit arbitrary in like the way that you'd pull on. So it could definitely be written up for that, but I haven't really decided that.
It's just, yet. I was just thinking, in the interest of getting more people on it, I think there's certainly more people around who would be tempted by an 8B, 8B plus.
Yeah.
Than they would by whatever the full thing is.
Yeah, yeah,
rules
yeah.
Rules out a lot of people based on.
Pretty much a one mover then. I think pretty much a one mover, pretty much, like that point. Mm. Which, yeah, could be fun. So, yeah, maybe. Well, maybe. If you're functioning around that level, give it a try.
Give it a try and find out.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty fun.
Wicked. Well. Wow.